We trot to the offices of El País, and it's Nick Lyne this morning. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Good, sir. You know, if I was just moan, nobody would listen anyway, Nick, exactly, to be honest with you. Yeah, they'd just ignore me and walk past. So we start with dogs and why Spain needs to make it more difficult to get a dog.
Well, that's my opinion, anyway. And it's based, I suppose, to some extent on anecdotal evidence of just over the last few years, we're just seeing growing numbers of people on the streets of Madrid with dogs, uh-huh. More and more and more of them. And it's not just the mess aspect of it seems to be pretty much actually under control. People seem to have taken to the plastic bag solution and scooping up their dog's poop, mm-hmm. as they've done it. But what seems to be the problem is people buy, you know, this is something that we saw in the UK sort of half a century ago, isn't it? The people, you know, buying dogs, not realizing that they, you know, they live for sort of up to 15 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people's situations, circumstances change, and then suddenly, you know, the dog is a problem and they need to get rid of it.
Yeah, there's so many homes, you know, where dogs ending up with, you know, with wonderful people who are taking dogs in and, you know, and trying to look after them. But they seem more inundated here than I've seen anywhere.
Exactly. Well, Malaga, this is on the sort of side, but I don't know if we did this story with you, but you remember a couple of months ago, Malaga has introduced a scheme where all dog owners have to register the DNA of their dog.
Yes.
So and they're actually going to provide, importantly, they're going to provide financial assistance, aren't they? So that it doesn't just sort of, people on the lower incomes are actually able to sort of get involved. I suppose in the long term, those are the kind of initiatives that we need. I mean, personally, I think that we need to make people jump through a few more hoops, before they're allowed to get a dog. But the reason that I'm going on about that is because we published a story this morning, which is about the Madrid's Animal Protection Centre, which is sort of popularly known as the Dog Pound, although they do take in cats as well. Now, what happened, I don't know whether other regional governments have done this, but about 7 months ago, the regional government of Madrid passed a law banning animal protection centres and, you know, dog pounds, dog homes, whatever they call them, from putting animals down, you know, that they were unable to find homes for.
Yep.
I don't know if they've done that in Andalusia. There was that terrible case, wasn't there, a few months ago, of a woman who'd been making a fortune in a dog pound from just putting down animals, you know, willy nilly. But anyway, the problem is that it's a very good idea to try to, get these animals to sort of live a bit little longer while an adoption home is found for them. But the problem seems to be that they haven't provided the resources to the municipal animal protection centre to deal with, obviously, the mounting number of dogs in their care. Apparently, they actually only have room for 200, which seems an infinitesimally small number. I looked into this yesterday, and it turns out that between 6,000 and 10,000 dogs are abandoned each year in Madrid alone.
Crikey!
I know, it makes your hair stand on end, doesn't it?
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's sort of going on here is that they need obviously to have more resources. I mean, like you said earlier, obviously a lot of the animal welfare stuff is done by private associations and sort of groups of people who take animals in. At the same time, as they need to obviously increase the size of the capacity of this dog home, they're also running a sort of campaign on the social networks to encourage people to adopt rather than buying dogs. And also, they've actually opened a centre in the Retiro Park here in Madrid to inform people and encourage people to do that. And another law that they've also passed, which I suppose all this stuff is going to take time, isn't it, before it kicks in, is to prevent pet shops from putting dogs and kittens in the window.
Yes. Yes. Well, you mentioned kittens. Of course, cats, another issue entirely, it may be controversial, but I have a woman near me who feeds feral cats so that they're now completely overrunning the neighbourhood. And, she'll continue to feed them. I'm sure she thinks she's doing the right thing. But frankly, You know, yeah, I don't want 30 feral cats running around the urbanisation, to be honest.
We've got a colony just outside the newspaper here, actually. Yeah, right. It sort of breaks your heart when you go past and see them. But they just keep reproducing, and people feeding them doesn't help. Madrid actually again has introduced a scheme earlier in the year of authorising sort of colonies. And I think, again, the idea is to sort of limit the number of colonies, you know, of feral cats, and at the same time sterilise them. So that gradually, over time, what's really depressing sometimes about living in Spain is seeing things that your own country has been through half a century ago.
Yeah.
And nobody here seems to have sort of bothered to look at the, you know, what happens.
Yes. The wheel is round. Have a look at that and change your square one just slightly and you'll find that it rolls a little better. Yeah.
Right.
But not in a told you so way, just in a, have a look around you, it's been done before. So, yeah. But a lot of it is down to money, as you know, as everything is these days, Nick. And, you know,
and a lot of it about.
Yeah. And the people who do fine work looking after these animals who are not funded by anything other than donations, they do a great job. And there's no doubt about that.
I take my hat off to them. Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah, do you wear a hat?
I do, actually, yes.
You do?
I bought one on Sunday.
Delighted to hear it. You can go and buy a castle now to go with your hat, then.
Now then, I have a question for you. I suspect that you were of a similar age to myself. Mm. Do you remember a movie from 1974 with David Essex?
Of course.
Called That'll Be the Day.
Remember it? I was in it. No, I wasn't in it, but no, I remember it. I remember every word. Yeah, I can sing you all the songs from it, mate.
Well, do you remember at the end of it, you know, when he's made it big, Jim, what was his name? Yeah. Jim McClane.
That's it, Jim McClane, correct.
The character.
Correct, very
and,
good.
And he overdoes it a bit, and he flies off, doesn't he? Disappears, and he buys a castle in Spain.
Yes.
Do you
remember
the closing shot? And then the sequel, Stardust, has him sort of living in this little Spanish village, doesn't he, in his castle?
That's right, it does. You're absolutely right. Yeah, fantastic.
Right, but that's my attempt at a seamless Sieg.
Where him and Sunita lived happily ever after. Oh, that came later, I think, him and Sunita.
Exactly, yes. I saw a picture of him on the internet the other day. Poor, he's gone bald.
Oh, no, but he's still a handsome lad. He was always a handsome lad, David Essex. They liked him. He was on all the walls, David Essex.
He was,
wasn't with his silver dream machine, whatever he called it, yeah.
Oh, that was a bit, he should have left it in the glamour room. Anyway, let's not...
Anyway, what's this got to do with bleeding castles in Spain?
Well, what it's got to do with it is because it's apparently... I'm not quite sure why this is considered a news story, but apparently more and more castles in Spain are up for sale.
Ah.
Right, historic ones, because I think the one that David Essex moved into probably wouldn't have been for
no,
sale.
No, I think it's probably a showbiz castle, as we call it in the trade.
I think it's actually, you know, part of the national heritage or something. It was a bit like having a Spanish rock star buying, you know, Marlborough House or something.
Yeah.
But it's history repeating itself, Bill. The Spanish aristocracy, just like the British aristocracy did back in the 50s and 60s, are facing increasingly hard times, bless them.
Okay.
And they're unable to look after their castles in growing numbers. So our story led off with the 21st Lord of the Castle of Los Velasco, which is outside Bilbao. It was, as I said, it was originally started in the 14th century, and it really does look just like you would expect a castle in Spain to look like. But inside, apparently, it has all mod cons.
Oh.
But the current owner, the 21st Lord, who goes by the name of Eduardo Gil Lang, says that mounting health problems mean that he needs sun and tranquility. And as I'm sure you know, Bilbao is not noted for its sun. I'm not sure about the tranquility.
Right.
So I think basically he wants to flog it and head down to where you are. Probably.
Oh, okay. Well, I think he might need a little more money to buy a castle down this way.
Well, exactly. Well, he's asking $2.75 million for the castle, which is a bargain, isn't it? Really,
yeah,
you wouldn't get a rooftop flat in Marbella for that. So we've got a lady here called, if anybody's listening is interested, she's called Elvira Fafian, and she's an expert in the market. And she says that apparently Spain's going through a very good moment. Previously for foreigners, it was unthinkable that they could buy this kind of property in Spain. It shocks them, and that opens many doors for us, she says. The foreign investor doesn't just buy a building, she warns. he or she also buys histories. And these castles, say that they come with their own coat of arms, a family shield. So that's a plus for you.
Wow. How cool.
Exactly, yeah. So the prices, apparently, yes, starting price is something like about, yeah, you're not going to get much for under 2 million, Bill. 6 million will really get you the full works.
It's disappointing, Nick. You've built me up now. I thought I was in with a shout there, but I'm not even in the ballpark, so, yeah.
Right.
Oh, well.
Well, never mind.
Do you know the definition of a castle is, you know, by the way? This is not a joke. I actually thought that a castle had to have a moat, but apparently it doesn't. It is a large building fortified against attack with thick walls, battlements, towers, and often a moat. I thought they had to have a moat to be a castle.
Well, as far as I'm, if it's not, I mean, I'm they're not going to get my 2 points.
Well, you've got to have a moat. Absolutely.
Unless it's got a moat.
Where are you going to keep your boat? If you haven't got a moat, you can't have a boat, can you?
Exactly.
There's nowhere to float. You have to keep a goat. Let's move swiftly onwards and talk about bullfighting.
Yes, back to animal welfare. Yes, well, I don't know. I'm sure, again, a lot of your listeners, I think, are involved in animal welfare, aren't they? And probably quite a few of them probably don't take a rather dim view of bullfighting.
Yes, yes.
So we've got this animal rights party, which seems to be doing quite well, called PACMA. And they take, you know, quite a combative, shall we say, approach to highlighting mistreatment of animals in Spain. And their particular bugbear, needless to say, obviously, is bullfighting, which I'm not sure. Bullfighting seems to be just about always just about to sort of die on its feet.
Mm.
But it's like the bull itself; it staggers on. Mm. Well, anybody who had any doubts about the dark side, the gory side of a bullfight, should try to see a new documentary that has been made for PACMA, and it's by a young documentary maker called Jaime Alexos.
Mm-hmm.
And what he decided, he realized after he went to his first bullfight about 5 years ago and started sort of researching on, you know, the internet and generally, that all the, you know, the footage, the whole thing, the whole perspective is always, you know, the spectacle and seen, you know, as it were, from the point of view of the bullfighter, with the bull just a sort of almost like a, you know, a sort of decorative element.
Yeah.
And so he decided to make a 30-minute documentary, which just basically focuses entirely on the bull. In fact, the bullfighter's face and most of his sort of body is cut off. And it basically, in a rather, well, I don't think it's, you know, it's gory, but I don't think there's any question that the people making it are gratuitous about it. But basically just really just focuses on the process of death and the different ways in which, you know, the animal is slowly and inexorably put to death. A good idea, I guess, but to some extent, I suppose, I'm not sure whether it would be preaching to the choir here, really. I suppose those people who are against it already are. I'm not sure whether you'd get anybody who... What do you find your listeners? Are they ambivalent about bullfighting? Do you get anybody coming on there to sort of really support it?
Well, I would not wish to speak on behalf of my listeners, erudite and intelligent though they are. But from a personal point of view, I've never seen a bullfight except a little snippet of it on the telly. There is a part of me which is kind of curious, but mortified that I even am curious. So not for me, I don't think.
Right, okay, so you probably don't really need to see this documentary.
No, and I don't think sticking a GoPro camera on the back of a bull is going to help me either way, to be honest, but yeah.
No, exactly. And of course, inevitably, you get the other arguments back saying that the meat industry is actually probably far more cruel to animals than bull. Yeah, and then off we go,
actually, absolutely. As a kind of little addendum here, just had an email which says Spain needs an organisation like SNP in the UK, which is a private organisation dedicated to sterilising feral cats that can be recognised by the snip taken out of one ear. So there we are.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I'll talk to
our Spanish colleagues and see if they're interested in investigating that.
Indeed. So where can people find more about these and other stories, sir?
Oh, well, they can obviously go to the El País Spanish language website and scroll across until they see English edition and click onto us there. They can find us by Googling El País English edition. And, of course, we are on the Twitter sphere or in the Twitter sphere and on Facebook.
Fantastic. I love the irony of one of the comments you made during this little piece here. As a journalist, to come up with the comment, do you know what? I don't even know why this is a news story.
journalist. I resemble that remark.
Have a good week, Nick. We'll speak to you soon. See you later. Cheers. Bye-bye.